Hi, Ava.
Hey, Maya.
I don't feel like going home.
I don't feel like going home either.
What are we gonna do?
Let's just chill here.
Are we allowed to?
It's public property, isn't it?
Guess what Megan wore to school today?
OMG, there's Sergeant B-Safe. Let's get it on, baby, because I'm ready to start.
Take a lock off the cage because I'm ready to bump. It's late. What are you girls doing here?
Are we in trouble?
Trespassing, loitering and prowling, along with curfew violations, are a big deal.
Thank you, but I'll take it from here, Captain Chaos. Rules are made for a reason. A lot of bad things can go on after curfew. We're gonna have to call your parents.
You girls must have snuck out, which is not good.
Ladies, thank you for showing up in a timely manner. Just want to let you know, this will be a warning for them. They can't be out past curfew, especially on private property. Not only that, but they're also loitering and prowling. You two are able to take your daughters home. I know they'll get straightened out.
You and Captain Chaos keep up the great work.
Thank you, Sergeant B-Safe. We will straighten them out.
Well, I'm glad we got that situated.
Absolutely. Seemed like a mistake that was innocent enough. I'm glad we got the opportunity to educate the kids and make their parents aware. The work of a public servant is never over. One job down and many more to go. And that's your tip of the day. Get you on your way.
Hey, officer, your keys are in the door.
I follow you on TikTok. I've already seen this. By the way, you don't have your seatbelt on, sir. If you'll pull right up there for me.
Oh, no. Please don't walk over here. Please don't. Oh, okay. Hi. How can I help you?
Welcome to Black and Blue, the podcast that brings you the untold stories behind the badge. Every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we dive deep into the lives of our unsung heroes, the first responders and law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line to protect us all. So join us as we humanize the badge. We shed light on the incredible individuals who wear it proudly. From rookies just starting out on their journey, to seasoned vets with years of experience, even retirees who continue to make a difference in their communities. Come with us and discover the trainings that mold us. The unforgettable experiences that make us. And the publications that inspire us to push forward. So buckle up and get ready to embark on a thrilling journey through the lives of those who protect and serve. This is the Heartbeat, Black and Blue. Black and Blue, where the stories behind the badge are true.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Black and Blue. I am your host,
I'm Coach Klee. I'm Klee Tillman. I'm Clark Tent. I have so many different names on so many different platforms, but you guys know who I am. I'm your motivational speaker, your empowerment coach, and your author, and your favorite baker's favorite baker. Here joining you for another episode of Black and Blue, where we go live weekly at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And when we go live with the law enforcement or first responder official, whether they're rookie, seasoned, or retiree. And when we talk, when we interview them, we talk about their training experiences and publication. And we got a special show lined up for you today. I know we're on a day where we don't normally go, but make sure you guys tune in. Make sure you guys hit that like button. Make sure you guys get those questions ready or those comments ready. Like I said, like you guys already know, we're streaming on five different platforms. One on LinkedIn, two on Facebook, and two on YouTube right now. And so therefore, I can't see who's on here. If you're looking for that shout out, you got to put your name and where you're from in the comment section, and I'll give you that shout out that you're looking for. If you have a question, you have to put your question in the comment section as well, and we'll acknowledge it as soon as we can. Understand that when you post something, there's about a 3 to 5 second delay. So we might actually be on another topic, but we will address the comment as soon as we can. All right. And if you're watching the replay, don't hesitate. Make sure you still hit that like button. You tag, like, and share, and put those comments in there, and we'll address them as fast as we can. All right. We got a lot of things going on. You saw the One Way Publishing is a sponsor of this platform right here. And you saw the cartoon Sergeant Be Safe playing right before this, before we got into the intro and got into the right now me speaking and getting tongue-tied all over myself. One Way Publishing is a publishing company that sponsors us, and they sponsor the Sergeant Be Safe cartoons as well. I've got a couple books behind me. I published five myself, and they also have a couple clients that publish their own book too. Their clients, their motto is they can turn a mere thought into a book that's bought, and they're not hesitating or slighting away from it. The two latest ones, let me get these banners up here properly. The two latest ones is Kay Childs. She got her poetry book, a book that she's been sitting on for over 25, 30 years, and she finally got published, made her dreams come true. And not only that, got a children's book, To Be So Tall. Sophia and Shayla Thompson, the mother-daughter duo, got to get their dreams coming true as well to produce their first children's book that is now, both of these books are breaking records right now. So make sure you guys check that out. They're available on Amazon. If you're looking to be on the show yourself, workwithklee.com. It's in the comment section. You see it scrolling below. That's how you want to reach out and get a hold of someone, and you'll be scheduled to be on the platform. If you're looking to be a voiceover for Sergeant Be Safe, that's the exact same way as well. Or if you're looking to have your own book published, it's a one-stop shop right there. But without further ado, like I said, I'm Coach Klee, Klee standing for, and someone dubbed me this other name for continuing law enforcement edutainment. And we're edutaining each other through the voice of conversation, learning about one another. If you wanted to see how we humanize the badge or see exactly what law enforcement and first responders do, this is the platform that you need to be on. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I think I covered everything. Make sure you guys hit those likes. Like I said, we got a special guest. I'm going to introduce her here. She's got over 27 years in law enforcement. She's worked patrol. She's worked as a UC undercover for, believe it or not, human sex trafficking. And that's a hot topic right now across the nation. Many movies, if you've seen the movies that are coming out about it, if you've seen all the education that's coming out about it, we had a couple guests on here that discussed it as well. Most of you guys know that I was narcotics for a long time and also patrol, school resource, so many different areas. But one thing I did not do is for sex trafficking, child crimes, or any of those things. That is not my wheelhouse. So to actually get somebody on the show who's familiar with that is a wonderful thing. Learning about that, learning about things to look for, what happens to people who are caught up in the game, preventative maintenance, get those questions ready. We've got Heidi Chance, her website. Let me get this website. A Chance for Awareness is scrolling below, and it's also in the comment section. Not right now, but make sure you guys take a look at it. She's going to discuss all that. She's, like I said, 27 years in the game doing this, and we're going to pick her brain and have a lot of fun while we do it. I'm going to bring her to the stage now. Without further ado, Heidi Chance. Heidi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Perfect, perfect. Heidi, thank you for making yourself available and coming on the show. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a retired detective. Where you were describing my background a little bit, I spent most of my career at Phoenix Police Department. Here in Arizona, and that is where I was the undercover, working undercover, doing the human trafficking investigations in Phoenix. Prior to that, though, I was a school resource officer, and then also patrol, community action officer, just a couple of other little things in my patrol career. But the bulk of my career so far has been human trafficking. And that's what I continue to investigate currently for a different agency, trying to live that second pension life.
Trust me, I get it. I know. Congratulations on having so many years in law enforcement and being effective, and onto the another phase of law enforcement. That's not easy to do, to actually be in this game for a couple decades or more. So I salute you for that.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Can I ask you, what gave you the burning desire to actually get into law enforcement back when you did?
Well, the reason why I look so young and I have 27 years experience is because I actually started at 18. I started, there was an opportunity right when I graduated high school for a cadet trainee program. And I graduated in September. I started with the police department. In May, and I graduated in September, May. And then started with the police department in September for the cadet program. And that was like a light blue shirt, pepper spray, a baton, handcuffs, and a fully marked patrol car driving around South Phoenix, if you've ever been to the Phoenix area before. Basically responsible for taking accident reports, dusting for fingerprints, photographing crime scenes, searching females. But obviously in a fully marked patrol car, I got flagged down quite a bit. And it was truly a situation of where is a cop when you need one. But it was definitely a learning experience, and it really helped me, you know, decide that that was the career I wanted to go forward and move on with.
Gotcha. So those experiences actually led you to getting experiences with more in-depth patrol, and then, like you said, school resource officer. What were those experiences like as you were coming up through the ranks and also through the profession itself?
Yeah, so I went into the academy in 1998, and I had turned 21 3 weeks before I graduated. So I was a fresh 21-year-old out there doing patrol in West Phoenix area called Maryvale Precinct, just second shift patrol. I spent 3 years, almost 4 years doing that. And I got, my husband and I had a baby. And so I wanted to move to a, you know, location within the police department where you could be a little bit more accommodating with schedule and a newborn baby. So I went into school resource officer, which is typically, I think, what a lot of female officers end up doing for a period of time, sometime in their career. And I went to a particular school in West Phoenix. I actually blinked and 6 years went by. I was there a lot longer than I expected to be there. One of the, you know, things that kind of was my burning desire to join the human trafficking unit really didn't happen until I had contact with a girl that was a former student of mine at the middle school. She was in, I think, seventh or eighth grade when I knew her. Obviously, as a school resource officer, we can't keep the patrol car. I didn't get to take it home, so I had to return it every day. And I remember going into the precinct, returning the car, seeing her in trouble in the juvenile holding area. And, you know, I kind of asked her, why are you in trouble? She recognized me as the cop from her school a few years back. She was still a juvenile on that day. And, you know, it was one of those things where she told me she was in trouble for prostitution. And I had already been a police officer for 5-6 years. And I didn't think that kids got involved with prostitution. And so that was kind of like that mind-blowing moment for me, where I, you know, that in combination with I had an opportunity to start doing the undercover sting operations, posing as a prostitute on the street. They were kind of asking girls from patrol if they could get some new faces out there. And I started doing that. And that's really where my passion came from, and really wanted to continue on and see what it would be like to work with the unit.
Gotcha. Thank you for the rundown. I remember while working narcotics, and we'd be on the task force, and we'd all often work with a lot of female officers for various things as well. Sometimes we would do prostitution stings at various hotels throughout the county or other locations. And it would always, I'd always be bewildered. The females who would dress up or be the prostitute undercovers for the weekend. I'm like, don't most of the individuals who solicit, wouldn't they know or wouldn't they get an aha moment? Because it didn't seem like two and two always added up to four involving prostitution. Did you often see that while working undercover, or was it a lot different than that kind of experience, if that makes sense at all?
Well, I think what you were saying is a couple of things. Unfortunately, when I did start doing it, I was actually thrown into it. It was kind of like on the job training. There was no like undercover school or anything offered. Later on down the road, when I got to the unit, I created one, but there was nothing like that. And so it was literally on the job, you know, learning to, it's a fine line, act like this is going to happen, but don't touch me, that kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, it was definitely a sticky situation sometimes and learning on the job. But also, I unfortunately worked an area there in Maryville Precinct where I also worked patrol, and that probably wasn't wise. Early on, though, I realized I'm a blonde light bulb standing out there. I need to do things to change up what I look like. And so I think I'm one of the only girls that ever wore wigs, but I would throw on a brown wig, a red wig, a dark pink wig, you know, just to change up what I look like, because I didn't want to get recognized because I am working patrol in this same area. And that would be officer safety and super dangerous if I got recognized.
Right. I can understand. That'd be very scary. And like you said, an officer safety issue while working at UC. Are there any experiences that you could share with us, a good, bad, or indifferent, just to kind of give us a glimpse into your world of while working undercover?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's exciting. It's a fun job to do. Mm-hmm. The purpose of it is to target sex buyers. And so we are posing as prostitutes to engage in a conversation where an offer agreement for a sex act in exchange for compensation happens. And it is fun to do. It is, you know, really fun to not be in uniform or have to, you know, take radio calls, hanging out your whole shift. Of course, you have to write all these reports and book all these people sometimes. But we used to create like a challenge, like in the conversation, you had to say a word like pickle or banana or some funny word that if you, you know, made it into a sentence and got it out, you know, you would, you know, get people to buy you lunch and things like that. I know that I once had a deal in literally 45 seconds. I went out from the hotel door, first vehicle that saw me flipped around and pulled up on me. And it was pretty, pretty simple and easy to do. So I might hold the record for 45 seconds for a deal, but it was definitely also tricky situations. I mean, you've got individuals that carry weapons, that are high on drugs, that are actually inebriated while driving, that try to touch you, try to hold on to you. You're standing outside the car. So it can be very dangerous as well. And for sure, later on when we started engaging with traffickers, I have had traffickers, one of which that I had arrested, recognized me. And when he flipped around, I wasn't going to stick around to find out what he wanted to say to me or do to me. So I ran up the stairs and he ended up getting pulled over, and he did have a gun in the car. So it is definitely dangerous for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to hear the fun and funny stories, but the ones that kind of make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, I'm glad it worked out where it was a good outcome on your behalf, you and your team, platoon, squad, behalf, and you were able to apprehend that guy. So so now that you've got years of experience while doing this, what is it like to instruct and educate not only a police department or police agency, but also anyone with the public or anyone who may have a question? Because there's so many different levels to this. You see the movies that are out there, Sound of Freedom. I know that's been a buzzword or a Buzz movie for a little while, and it piques a lot of people's interest and they have questions. What is it like to give instructions or education for anyone who may have any kind of questions for you?
Yeah, so two things. Sound of Freedom's wonderful movie. It's got people thinking about human trafficking, talking about human trafficking. It isn't really a picture of what it looks like domestically here in the United States. There are other movies out there, like the one that filmed our unit for 3 years, Sex Trafficking in America. It was Frontline PBS that filmed that movie. And, you know, that one's going to show you what's happening here domestically and how law enforcement's responding to it. But when I do the education to the public, a lot of times it's still happening where people ask me, what does a sex trafficking victim look like?
Right.
As if I'm supposed to describe like this one demographic and that's who this victim is, or this is who this happens to. And there really isn't a way to describe that. And I'm still getting that question. As far as law enforcement, I mean, I don't know about you, but back in 1998, when I was in the academy, I didn't get a class on human trafficking.
Yeah.
No?
No, so, I did not. No, I'm agreeing with you. No, I don't remember. I went in the academy in 2004, and I don't remember any class on human trafficking at all.
Yeah, even then. And we only started teaching our own law enforcement officers in 2015 in Phoenix here about human trafficking and what to look for. So you have generations of cops out there that looking for gangsters and drug dealers, and they don't see pimps, and pimps are bragging about it. So when I teach at the academy, I show a Facebook Live video that I found of a pimp that literally was filming himself, and there were 5 patrol cars dealing with whatever emergency in the background of his video, and he's describing and bragging that they don't see him, and he's not wrong because we're not looking. And so that is definitely teaching old dog new tricks and getting law enforcement officers to actually see traffickers is almost like pulling teeth a little bit. Not the new guys, but some of the old guys. And it's really needed because these traffickers are literally bragging about you not seeing them.
Yeah, and that's kind of embarrassing to have a Facebook Live and you're dealing with whatever kind of issue in the background and someone's bragging that they're conducting their illegal business of sex trade or human product right there under our noses, right there, and not even in fear of being apprehended at all.
Yeah, I played that video on purpose to piss people off.
Yeah, I bet. I was watching one of your podcasts that you've done where you were a guest on, and it was interesting that you made the comment, and it was kind of an aha moment with me. It resonated. Because it being narcotics, again, with that background, going after dealers, users, what have you, or following the money or just following evidence, things like that. Dealer has whatever product that they're trying to sell to the user to consume. And once that product's consumed, it's gone. Or so basically, if the product's consumed or destroyed, we may or may not even have a case for that individual or anything like that. So a dealer is always selling product. They have to pick product up. They have to distribute product. It's product, product, product. With human trafficking, I remember you saying that the person is the product. So therefore, vehicle searches can be null and void because I'm zoned in on looking for smells or certain compartments or traps or things like that, trying to find that when the person themselves is the product. And if they don't speak up or give any kind of signs or anything like, yeah, we're going on this trip. I'm from Maine. I'm going all the way to New York for whatever reason for vacation. And this is my college friend. Then the red flags are down to zero and we move on. And I was like, wow, how interesting is that? Or how alarming is that actually that we so many things have slipped under our noses without us even properly looking because we're so looking on a physical product instead of an actual person.
Yeah. And there might be physical signs, like you might see condom boxes or lubricants or sex toys or multiple hotel keys or hotel receipts that don't match up to the story where they say they're coming and going to or from or have been. But there's definitely not, you're right, there's not, that physical thing that we're looking for. And it's just a matter of a vibe, I think, that you do what you do, you separate people, you ask them initial questions, you see if they're kind of reacting to those questions, that they're in fear of this other person. A lot of times it's, you know, if you're asking them for ID and they pull out all these IDs, well, why are they holding IDs for other people? One of which is the passenger in the car. That's, you know, that should be an indicator that why don't they have their own ID and why are you holding it for them, or those kind of things. So there are definitely things that when I present to law enforcement agencies and speak to patrol about just basic recognition and response on regular calls that you go out on, some of the things to look for and pay attention to so that we are seeing these traffickers.
Gotcha. So let's say a traffic stop, you come across someone who does have multiple IDs with three individuals. They're the driver and three individuals in the car, and that the driver has the IDs of the other three individuals. How would you suggest someone, a law enforcement officer, handle the remainder of that traffic stop just to try and dig a little further or find out some information?
Yeah, I think what obviously, if you're outnumbered, call for other officers to come stand by, and you're going to need to separate these people so you can kind of get a gist. But there's other physical indicators you could look for, too. We didn't talk about the indicators, but a branding tattoo, like if you notice that there's, you know, these three individuals all have the same tattoo, like that's like the most physical indicator I could give you besides actually walking up on them having sex in the car. It's a pretty blatant, in-your-face advertisement that they are possibly being trafficked with this brand, the tattoo. And it could be a symbol. It could be a nickname for the trafficker. But, and you see that, and obviously you've got to, if anything, you've got, this person in possession of other people's identities. So there's already some reasonable suspicion to talk to them further about that. But definitely separating everyone. All of those things, but be mindful. These people, like I said in that other podcast interview, they're not afraid of being caught for anything because they're confident that they're controlling those victims and those victims are loyal to them and they aren't going to talk. So separating them, if you can find a reason to transport these people, transport them separately, get them away from each other. So in that way, those victims might feel more comfortable coming forward and disclosing what's really happening.
Gotcha. And your experience, how do you see predominantly how an individual can become a victim?
Yeah, so I talk about this a lot because people don't get, I mean, they believe the myths, I think, still about victims. Like it's only the poor kids or it's only the kids in child welfare or in foster care. But I mean, in the one case that I talk about a lot, it is literally seven victims, two juveniles, the one victim, adult female. She was a Department of Corrections officer in her 40s, lost her job, became a stripper, met the guy who opened up his own little brothel out of his house and was prostituting her and exploiting her in her 40s. Yes, she's a vulnerable person. She lost her job. And so money probably was a thing for her as far as her vulnerability and her, you know, maintaining her lifestyle. But in that same case, there's a girl who had a full ride scholarship to Northern Arizona University. Her mom's a nurse. She has zero history of child sexual assault or abuse or neglect or anything. Kind of well-off kid, full ride scholarship, educated. And she met somebody on Craigslist, wanted to take modeling pictures of her. And that guy introduced her to the brothel owner. And then, you know, her whole life was going this way and now it's this way. And she's a resident of our women's prison here. So it is, you know, not just one economic demographic. It isn't just females also. We have male victims, LGBTQ plus transgender victims, victims that, you know, are vulnerable. And that's just it is traffickers. They don't have a regular job. All they do all day long is manage the victims they have and try and find new ones. And so they're really skilled at looking for vulnerabilities and exploiting those people that are that they find are vulnerable.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Got a comment on the floor. Dylan Rachon, in the field, was there a hand signal or something, some other signal that prostitutes who were in trouble would use to alert the police? I get that question. I see that question a lot. So thank you for asking that.
Yeah, I don't know that they know of a hand signal, Because I've never had them really tell me a hand signal. I think what you're referring to maybe is what's on the posters in the airport. Mm-hmm. Because there is, with the National Human Trafficking Hotline on the poster, a obviously the phone number, you can text message it, you can call it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little blurb and tiny little writing about how to indicate to a flight attendant that you're being trafficked. And I can't remember what that hand signal is off the top of my head, but I know I've seen it before. But I've never had any victim, you know, I'm interviewing them and I've, you know, have talked to them for hours. I've never had any of them say, hey, I tried to get a hold of cop once and do this hand signal and they didn't know what I was doing. I never had them do that. Not to say that, you know, victims aren't trying to do that and law enforcement isn't seeing that, but I haven't had an experience with that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. I've been 18 years. I haven't seen anyone. I haven't recognized a hand signal as well either. I had pulled up on cars while on patrol that are parked in dark parking lots and they're engaged in some sort of activity and, you know, you separate the two of them. Out of, let's just say, 10 of them for simple numbers, maybe one of them were actually some sort of prostitution deal. Most of them were either infidelity or high school kids trying to sneak around and not get caught. Yeah.
And there's such a thing as indecent exposure or public sexual indecency. Yes.
Yep. Stand by. We're going to pause for the call. Sergeant B. Safe is going to interrupt for a quick commercial break, and we're going to jump right back into this interview. So don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
I can't wait until my new children's book is finally published. Just riding along in my car, listening to music.
Yeah, of course you are. And you're not looking in your rearview mirror either.
OMG, is that Sergeant B-Safe behind me? Guess I should get out of the way.
Oh my goodness! Pull over to the right and get out of the way! There's an emergency up ahead and I need to get there.
Drivers, you should be operating your vehicle with your radio at a reasonable level. You should also be aware of your surroundings, including what's behind you. So when I come through with my flashing lights and siren, you can immediately get out the way and I can go help whoever's in danger or whatever emergency is happening. Those seconds that it takes for you to pull over are very valuable. Me and my friends need every second imaginable so we can properly serve you. So pull over to the right immediately when you see our lights and sirens so we can go save a life.
Ah, my packages have finally arrived. About time. I'm sure glad I live in an area where nothing happens. Only action around here are deer chomping on people's flowers. I'll take him in after I get done cutting this here grass. This is my favorite pastime.
Aha! I see a package left unattended.
Another crime of opportunity.
Easy pickings for a guy like me. Oh no! There's B-Safe again.
Sergeant B-Safe,
hello,
is that
there.
You? It's good to see you.
Looks like I'm right on time again. Rob, you blind? Get out
People
of there.
People make it so easy for me to get caught.
Hold on now. He really wanted to steal my packages?
Yes, he did.
Sergeant B-Safe, you're the best. The coolest cat in the land. You saved the day again. We need more like you, brother. We need more like you.
Trust me, I truly appreciate the glory and accolades. But you can really thank me by being vigilant over your property and making my job easy. Well, back to jail you go.
Ooh.
Package thieves are the worst. Even if you can't get home in time, invest in a security camera so you can catch these thieves. And their next view will look like this. Trust me, this isn't a good view. These seats aren't made for comfort. They're made to transport. Kids, this is one seat you don't want to sit in. Just imagine what your parents would think.
Ooh,
and this is Sergeant Be Safe giving you another tip of the day to get you on your way.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Thank you. Let me get this off the screen here. Thank you. I hope you guys like that commercial. Sergeant Be Safe is already there, making things happen. We're jumping right back into this interview with Heidi Chance, talking about human sex trafficking. And we've had a wonderful discussion so far about it, getting indicators, some of her experiences, things we had a question on things that we should look for, things that we could look for. But let me ask you this for, and we got a puppy right here.
I have
here.
A co-host.
There we go. How are you? Well, one question that always comes up about human sex trafficking is, especially when it involves a youth or juvenile, is who is the person who gets them involved? How does a young person get involved? Is it some stranger that starts maybe emailing them or shooting messages to them by way of social media or video games? Is it familial? What are some of the normal signs or indicators of someone that is targeting young juveniles?
Yeah, so there's so many. I mean, some of them is out in the open. I had an investigation involving a girl that literally went to school every day. And then volleyball practice came around in the afternoons and on the weekends, and she was with her trafficker and not at volleyball practice. And that went on for months. And she was recruited by another girl at school. Places where you would be anywhere near a known area for prostitution. Like in Phoenix, we have several known areas, like literally miles and miles of a street. Wow. Where there's street prostitution happening. And I mean, we have good weather most of the time. So, and you know, if there's a kid hanging out in that area or a runaway kid in that area, they're extremely at risk for being either solicited by a sex buyer or recruited and groomed by a trafficker. House parties, convenience stores, the mall, food courts, wow. Those kind of things. But then online, that is literally giving almost an anonymous opportunity for traffickers to spend all day long casting a fishing line, sending out messages, copying and pasting on several different platforms to profiles all over the United States. Because I've had traffickers reach out and trying to recruit and groom me on some of my undercover social media profiles. And I had one from Orlando, Florida that we extradited from Orlando, Florida. And then, you know, several from California, Nevada area, they're, you know, unbiased as far as it's not just local is my point. And they're sending these messages all day long. It is really a situation where unfortunately our youth believe YouTube University and they think that they can be Instagram famous if they leave their profile open to the public. And that's literally an open door for not only traffickers and sex buyers, but child predators also to walk right into your house, into your child's bedroom and engage with your child without you knowing. And that is happening all day long, every day.
Wow. What kind of tips would you give parents that are watching right now and that are just kind of having an aha moment, believing that, you know, are their kids that this kind of thing happens over there to somebody else, that this doesn't happen in my household or this wouldn't happen with my child. My child would immediately come to me because the red flags would go off and they would know.
Well, only if you have those conversations earlier with them, you know, don't think that because they're, you know, going to school every day and not being influenced by other people. They're definitely being influenced by other people. Some tips as far as I am aware, obviously, have the conversations earlier than you think. The national average when I first started investigating this crime was 15. It is now 13 and it's inching closer and closer to 12, 11 years old of a person entering into the life of sex trafficking if they are successfully lured away. And so having the conversation earlier, Talk to your kids about strangers that are trying to encourage them to delete conversations or encourage them to create a secret profile that you, mom and dad, don't know about, or encouraging them to speak in a code using, you know, a safe word or an indicator through an emoji of some kind that the parents walked in, or those kind of things. But also for me in the sex trafficking realm, when these kids are lured away, the isolation and keeping them away from family and friends is so important to the trafficker, making them completely dependent on the trafficker. So they try and remove them from the familiar. So they're going to take them to another state. And imagine being 13 years old, you have no ID, you ran away, you probably don't have the phone that you originally ran away with because the trafficker took it. And so they gave you this phone that you're supposed to communicate with buyers on. You don't have any phone numbers saved in the contacts list. Yeah. What 13-year-old remembers or has their parents' phone number memorized anymore these days?
Yeah.
And you can't talk to the police because this trafficker is filling your head with the idea, and he's not half wrong, but the cops are just going to arrest you because you've been committing a crime of prostitution. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay in that situation until you can find home, because you can't get on a plane. You can't get on a bus. You have no ID. You know what I mean? All of those things. So it's very, very concerning that if we don't have these conversations early on and it gets to that point, we've already lost. We've got to have, as parents, you've got to step up. We've got technology now that we didn't have before. We don't even know probably how bad it's going to be. We're just barely touching the surface on how bad it is with all the technology coming out that kids have access to since they were toddlers. Yeah. And they're very familiar with it. I had an investigation involving an officer's daughter who, you know, cops, we have rules. You put her phone away. He shut off the internet at the house. She was able to figure out how to use an iPod and get on the internet at a Starbucks to communicate with a guy who was trying to encourage her to run away from home. So, and you know, it's one of those where she lives with her dad as an officer. It is very scary. We need to be vigilant. Parents need to be on the up and up with all these new apps out there. You know, even the ones that the schools are suggesting, like at the beginning of the school year, Saturn app was suggested by the schools as a way to communicate with teachers and other peers. And I could create a Saturn app profile right now. There's no protections. And then I have a whole pool of kids I could talk to. So the only way to keep vigilant is parents need to learn and continue to learn on a regular basis all these new apps. And two places that I would suggest they learn that is the two companies that create devices, a cell phone that looks like a smartphone and an Apple Watch, and that is Bark Technologies or Gab, G-A-B-B, Gab Wireless. Okay. And if you use Chance for Awareness for both, you can get a discount. But the point is they have a blog. Both of those companies have a monthly blog. They post information about these apps that pop up out of nowhere every day. They rate the apps as far as the danger of the, you know, usage of a juvenile and how easy a predator can access the app and create a profile and engage with your kid. And so you have to be educated as a parent these days. It's just non-negotiable.
Gotcha. That's a bunch of good information. So in hearing all this bad news, there actually is hope. There are agencies or apps or businesses that are looking to help prevent this and help combat this epidemic that's going on. You said BARK and Gab again. Can you repeat those, please?
Yeah. So BARK, B-A-R-K, technology. And then Gab, G-A-B-B, wireless, Gab Wireless. Okay. And those two companies create devices for parents. Because, you know, I have parents ask me all the time, well, what age is appropriate to give my kid a phone? I mean, I know that other kids in the class probably have phones. So at least if you're going to give them a phone, give them one that looks like the other phones, but it doesn't have the ability to get on the internet. Gotcha. Because even when you think you put these parental controls on there, my own niece, who was 12 years old, my sister said I can share this story. My own niece figured out how to bypass the parental controls, created a secret Instagram, and she had men messaging trying to get her to send pictures of herself.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, luckily she found it before it was going on, before anything was sent. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely a scary situation. It's one of those things that I don't know if her peers were encouraging her to have this Instagram or what it was, but she was to the point where she was going to ignore the parental controls and her mom's rules and, you know, do it anyway. And unfortunately, that is also a thing where you have to have expectations and you have to have punishment.
Yeah.
As a good parent.
Yes. That's one thing I see now, that punishments are falling by the wayside when I'm responding to domestics, or at least the parent does have good intentions for punishment, but there's so many different devices. There's so many different other parents that will actually side with the kid, the juvenile, instead of the parent. And it's kind of, it becomes futile. That's a whole nother conversation in itself. But let me ask this, as far as social media and devices, what other familial connections should parents look out for, as far as adults, some sort of authority figure, some sort of religious figure, anything like that? Have you seen any or experienced any connections with any of those?
Yeah, so the term familial is you know, the action of a victim knowing their trafficker or their exploiter, mm-hmm. is what the term means. And I know there's a percentage out there. I think it's like 46% of all trafficking is familial. I would say that's probably 90%, because technically familial doesn't mean just your guardian or your parent or uncle or a cousin or a family related person. Familial could also mean someone you're in a romantic relationship, which is what traffickers do when they're barely just trying to recruit and groom you, is make you have this idea that you're going to be with this person romantically in a relationship. So that is also familial trafficking. But as far as some of the apps and social media, like I said, it's not just, you know, the Instagram, the TikTok. It could be these games that these kids are playing on. Not so much the traffickers, but maybe sex buyers and child predators. And then also these dating apps or these meetup apps, the swipe right, the swipe left apps. Like, what 13-year-old should be on those apps?
Yeah,
I don't know, but there are companies that are literally advertising and targeting the younger crowd of meetup apps, which is totally inappropriate and not okay. But unfortunately, they exist.
Wow, how big of a problem is this nationally? That you're from what you've seen, from when you've actually started working as an undercover to what you're actually doing now currently?
Well, you know, you can Google numbers, and I don't know where these numbers are coming from, because we don't know what we don't know, and we have no idea how many victims are out there because they haven't come forward yet. We only know about the victims that exist that we've documented and had contact with, or that other entities like the National Human Trafficking Hotline has received those complaints. That's the numbers that we should probably put some stock into as far as being accurate.
Right.
As far as the growth of it, I definitely think it's exploding. It used to be where it was tied with illegal arms trade, and I think it's inching more closer to, you know, criminal organization. The top criminal organization is drug trafficking, and I think human trafficking is coming up there to tie with drug trafficking. And that's a situation where, you know, drug dealers and gangsters see how it's more profitable, and you don't get caught like we discussed earlier. It's more profitable to traffic a person over and over and over again. And we do have a situation where, you know, things have changed. You've got pimps that used to be territorial and would shoot at each other and kill each other over, you know, the area that they were working their victims. And now they're kind of linking up together, and they're partnering up, and they're doing counter surveillance for each other, and they're traveling together. And, you know, there's definitely been some dynamic changes that, you know, aren't helpful for us, except for the fact that now we can charge them as a criminal syndicate. If you guys are going to work together, then okay, now you're a criminal syndicate. We've also evolved to, instead of having cases be based on just a victim, Mm-hmm. I've had several cases where I've done all this work, search warrants, cell phone footage. We're ready to go to trial. And then all of a sudden we received this letter from a random attorney saying that I encouraged this victim to say those things, that the trafficker was not the bad guy that we're saying he is, that the victim felt scared or intimidated by me, and that's why she said what she said. And it's one of those things where I lose the whole case because they changed their mind on prosecution, and that happens all the time. Also because it takes 1, 2, 3, 5 years to go to trial for some of these cases. But it's definitely a lot of things against us. But what we can do is evolve and go after these traffickers. Like I said, not just a victim-based case, but also a financial investigation on them. Doing that part will at least hold some felonies on them. And, you know, obviously all the money that they're earning is illegal money. So we can seize their bank accounts. We can take their Gucci purses and their Rolex watches and their cars and all their items that they purchased because they have no legitimate income. So that is what we're doing now for sure.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Good. That's a hearing the positive with all that negative.
Yeah.
At least there's some good in there.
Silver lining somewhere.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You got to look for it somewhere. But I want to talk about the case I think you worked that you're aware of or had parts of where someone was sentenced to 400 and some odd years working some sort of human trafficking organization. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah. So that case took 5 years in my career. And that was the one where I briefly talked about the Department of Corrections officer and the daughter of the nurse. Those two victims were adults in that 7-victim incident. That was a true familial trafficking. The original victim was 13 when her uncle first had sex with her. She was living in a small town with her grandma. Her mom had passed away. She didn't know who her dad was. There was some incest going on, and she thought that her uncle was her dad. She basically got in some trouble in a small town drinking underage. So she got put on probation. He convinces her grandma, his mother, to have her come live with him in Phoenix. And grandma didn't realize that that meant having her prostitute and have sex continually with him and work out of this brothel he had running in his home in Phoenix. The second victim was the daughter of that Department of Corrections officer, who was 17 when she was part of this situation and was also being exploited that way. The thing about this guy was he had this fascination with a French pornography book called The Story of O. And The Story of O is kind of a book about like the bondage and the dominant and the submissive and riding crops and chains and whips and all kinds of things and rules. In addition to the branding, these victims went through all of those things. And unfortunately, it took 5 years to go to trial. And in 2015, 50 Shades of Grey came out. If you recall 50 Shades of Grey,
I remember the movie now.
Movie number one. And we sequestered 600 jurors and literally had a questionnaire for them because people were on Dr. Phil talking about their amazing sex life because of 50 Shades of Grey. But the things that these victims went through, being whooped with riding crops and chained up and things, that's not fantasy. That was not okay. And that's what they went through, not for the purpose of, amazing sex life and a movie. This was real life for these victims, and it was all exploitation. So we found our jury, and luckily this trial went on for 7 months. Mm-hmm. I testified 11 times. The main victim testified for 18 days against her uncle. And I told her she's the bravest person I've ever met because she literally every day showed up to court in her 20s because the jury saw her, you know, several years later because it took 5 years to go to trial. It was a success, and he was found guilty on 101 out of 105 counts. Wow. And sentenced to 493.5 years. So it was a record at the time. I don't know if anyone surpassed that yet, but he deserves every second that he sits in prison.
Wow. See, that's why I wanted to ask that one, that question, just be it from all the negative that we've had or perceived negative. I mean, it's still educational and awareness that is needed to actually hear a story that had a more positive outcome from a tragic situation, a tragic incident itself.
Yeah, I present on that case frequently to both the community because I want them to understand that I have an ulterior motive when I present to the community. I am presenting to potential jurors, and I want these jurors to recognize this entire dynamic of this lifestyle. I might be describing this person as a victim, but yet their perception of the victim was they have to be handcuffed to a bed or locked in a bedroom somewhere. And I'm saying they're freely walking down the side of the road with a phone in their hand, but they're not free to leave. And getting a jury to wrap their head around that and this whole lifestyle and the recruitment and the grooming and all of the things that victims go through is really important to me because I want to have outcomes like that with that case. And we're seeing more of that. That's not the only trafficker I've put away for over 100 years. You know, the most recent one was 108 years, and that was one victim. So we have definitely evolved. We're doing a better job. We have better prosecutors, judges, and the jury with all the awareness outreach that we're doing is really what's making this be, you know, such a substantial sentence and, you know, actual justice for victims.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Sharon, that is wonderful. A chance for awareness. How did you come about that? And if someone were to reach out to you, what kind of services would you yourself be able to provide to them?
Yeah, so I created my website with the purpose of having a platform to host a course for individuals that want to learn from an expert on human trafficking and take the course so that they can educate themselves fully on, you know, some of the things we've talked about, but I have a whole several modules course. And then I also have a goal to break into the public speaking scene and have, you know, organizations, not even just law enforcement, but companies. Like, I want to find somebody with Airbnb and VVRO because Super Bowl's this weekend. And wouldn't you know, traffickers are renting short-term rental houses.
Wow, yeah.
Sometimes they're turning those into houses of prostitution. I've had several cases where they've done that. They know that we're paying attention to hotels. And so they're moving into the short-term rentals. And the awareness maybe to a realtor organization or whatnot is, you know, super imperative. And that's just one example. I mean, obviously, medical staff, schools. I mean, there's all aspects of where I could be a presenter at a conference. So I'm trying to break into the speaking scene. And then my consulting and coaching is for law enforcement agencies in regard to the specific undercover training. And I am a forensic interviewer, so how to interview a child sex trafficking victim. I have a class on interrogating these types of suspects and then putting these cases together to the point of successful prosecution, because these cases are not easy. Homicide detectives, their victim is dead right there. They're not going anywhere. Our victims, they disappear, they go back to prostitution, they get on drugs, all kinds of stuff. So just encouraging law enforcement to want to pursue these cases, even though they're difficult, is part of my mission as well.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I hope things work out for you. I hope things work out for the agency and you're able to be in a presenter and sharing this information, because this information is very valuable and it's needed. Again, you brought something, at least to me, I wouldn't think about it. It is Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even fathom Airbnb, but it makes perfect sense. And like you said, traffickers know that our eyes are on hotels and to look at them and have hotel managers and clerks bring it to our attention, signs that they see. But an Airbnb, that would be totally different. You would think someone, yeah, I'm going to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. I'm getting Airbnb because me and a group of my friends, we just want to enjoy the Super Bowl, be in the area, enjoy the Super Bowl, having a bunch of parties or whatever, and not knowing that anything criminal is even taking place, because, I mean, you can guise it as if it's a legit kind of getaway trip.
Yes. And if they don't know, you know, what's going on, what to look for, some of the things that, you know, even the neighbors might complain about, and then how to get this person out of their house. That's all, you know, stuff that, you know, I'd really like to break into that scene and educate on.
Gotcha. Gotcha. In a perfect world, I'm going to ask this question, and it's, you set a goal to set another goal. I know that, but let's just say in a perfect world, your end game goal, what would you like for Chance for Awareness to be if it could reach the pinnacle, the top goal that you would have? What would that look like for you?
Well, obviously, I think a lot of organizations have the eradication of human trafficking, specifically sex trafficking, as their main goal. To be honest, the only way to make that happen is to educate the public and have sex buyers stop buying sex. Right. This is a business. It is the supply and the demand. And if the demand doesn't exist, the supply has nowhere to function. So if we can get sex buyers to stop having sex with people, purchasing people, we will eradicate human trafficking. So that's the ultimate goal, is to, you know, do outreach, do podcast interviews, do presentations, speak on the awareness, because I think I'm reaching potential sex buyers that didn't realize how bad it was and what they were contributing to. And maybe I've changed some of their minds not to do that. And that would be like the ultimate thing.
Yep. I think you're doing a good job as well. Just working in law enforcement myself for so many years, I've learned things just from our conversation here. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Through the course of conversation, I may have forgot to ask a question, or I may have jogged your memory on something that you wanted to touch on. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us right now? The floor is yours.
Just that, obviously, if this isn't just law enforcement, as far as your audience, I've had lots of victims describe that they were in broad daylight, in public, cars driving by, people walking by, people at the, you know, businesses around them. And then they get assaulted by their trafficker in public in front of everybody. And so many times they've described that people would, you know, not call the police, not do anything to help. And if they did pull out their phone, it was to record it for a TikTok or record it for an Instagram, social media, something, which is totally inappropriate. And, you know, if we could just talk to our kids all about that as well, as far as, you know, you may not want to get involved. That's fine. You can make a call to 911. You can provide your phone number. You don't have to have the police show up at your house, but at least make that call so that you can help someone else. That would be my parting wish.
Perfect. Perfect. Heidi, thank you for making yourself available and sharing this information. This information is very, again, I keep saying it, but it is very valuable for us old guys like myself, or brand new parents, or any kind of rookie officer that may be looking, or any kind of high school kid that may be looking just for information awareness or education.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Perfect, perfect. And again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I know we're kind of on an off day, so if you're watching the replay and you do have questions, please feel free to put those questions in the comment, and I will make sure I can address them. If I can, I will make sure that I pass it on to Heidi where she can address them more, coming from an expert actually being involved in this realm of law enforcement. So don't be bashful, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Again, thank you guys for tuning in. This is Black and Blue. We go live weekly at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, I told you we were going to have a great show today. And again, Heidi, I appreciate you making yourself available for sharing this information. This is good information. Make sure you guys tag, like, share, get this information out there. We're going to continue on the month of February. We have an all-star lineup. We're going live again next week. I got a special person coming to the stage. I'm not going to tell you who they are because I got to leave you with a cliffhanger so you guys can tune in again next week with your questions and comments. Getting ready. Heidi, do you have one more thing that you want to say before we log off here?
No, just thank you so much for having me and you know, interest in helping to share the awareness on your platform. This is great.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being available again. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is Coach Clee, your motivational speaker, your empowerment coach, your author, and your favorite baker saying 10-4 over and out. We love you guys. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Sergeant B. Safe here, and I'm stuck in the office. I'm stuck. You want to know why? I'll be completing reports for stolen vehicles. Yeah, that's right, stolen vehicles. I tell people all the time to lock their doors and put away their valuables. However, this continues to happen. Do you know that about approximately 95% of all auto thefts can be prevented? Here, let's go for a walk, and I'll show you a few examples. Example number one, you go to the store and you leave your car running. Little do you know that Chance Wilder's on the prowl. He sees your car running with the door unlocked, gets in it,
and they're off! At the start.
Oh no!
Frustrating. Let's move on to example number two.
Ooh.
You're at home and the car's parked for the day. But you feel safe and secure and believe this could never happen to me. And there's Rob You Blind going from car to car. Just got
Party
caught though.
Poopa, be safe.
Hands up. You're coming with me.
Ooh.
People leave their car doors unlocked and believe it or not, their keys in them. Here's video footage of someone going onto someone's driveway and entering their car. And guess what? Stealing that too. Even if you don't keep your car key, don't keep your spouse's key in the vehicle either. Believe it or not, they park right beside you. So therefore, take the extra step, lock your vehicle, and take your keys inside. So here's a little bit of information for you. If your car is ever stolen, and then I find it and recover it, it's usually not in the same condition that it once was. It could have been involved in a motor vehicle accident because of joyriding, or just have more dents, scratches, and damage on it. You'll get an incident report and a tow bill. Your insurance company may cover the towing and recovering fee, but you could also have to come out of pocket with some extra expenses. So now let's move on to example number three. Parking lots at major businesses are prime targets. Lock your doors, put valuables away, park in well-lit areas, and definitely do not, I cannot stress it any harder, leave your vehicle running in the parking lot. Because no matter how many times Rob You Blind and Wild Chance go to jail, they will always take advantage of a prime opportunity to take your valuables or steal your vehicle. Don't be an easy target. Hands up, you both are coming with me.
Ooh.
These are just a few examples of how you can protect yourself and be vigilant with your property. And that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Subscribe now.
I'm not a bad cop.
I never once said you were. It would be real simple if the problem was bad cops. It ain't.